Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with our subject of God. So glad you could join us today. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And someone recently remembered we are having our, last year was our 100th anniversary of the church edifice. So, anyway, Gary's going to announce that later. So we're glad that you could join us, and we will begin with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 106 of Collectania. Good is infinite. If we limit good and concede power to evil, how can we expect to escape that which we believe has power to hold us in bondage? The first commandment forbids us to believe in a power apart from God. There is no error of any name or nature in my consciousness that can resist, hide, or escape the truth. The light of truth and love and life shines straight through my belief of evil and banishes it, chasing it into its native nothingness. My desire is to know and obey God's law, to be filled with all the fullness of spirit, knowing only the consciousness of God good. My health, strength, life, intelligence, action, etc., are subject to the governing and controlling power of the divine mind and to nothing else, for there is no other power. May we continue.
That was wonderful. Thank you. What you said, page 106?
106, yes.
Thank you. So, okay. Watching point, Karen.
Watch number 498. Watch that you regard God as the source of affection as well as protection. This point can well be remembered by thinking of him as Pa. See Miscellaneous Writings, page 263, line 12, which reads, always bear in mind that his presence, power, and peace meet all human needs and reflect all bliss. In war, men turn to him for protection who have never prayed before. But the question is, what will they do when the war is over? Unless they have established a sense of affection for him, they are apt to forget him and the good effect of having been driven to trust in him in time of trouble will be lost. The sense of his protection causes us to turn to him in trouble, and the sense of affection for him helps us to remember him when we are not in trouble.
Very, very good comments.
Well, I think when we are constantly, it says in the Bible, we love him because he first loved us. But also I've learned that if we're constantly acknowledging all the good in our daily experience, identifying ourselves as his child and seeing that everything that good that happens to us and friends and family and wherever, it's all God, then how can we not love him?
Thank you. And that is why the gratitude is so immensely important. Because if you don't have that and you don't see what God is doing in your life, then, you know, and a lot of people say that they don't really know how to love God. Well, that's the key to loving God. Ah, what a wonderful Father, Mother, God we have. Bruce?
You know, everybody knows that there is a God. but it's all too often, though, it requires extreme circumstances for someone to actually turn to him wholeheartedly. And it's kind of like a last resort, but it's not necessary. The extreme circumstances could be avoided if people really loved God and turned to him and took on the humility and discipline that goes along with it. And, you know, these extremities wouldn't have to happen. It wouldn't be totally unnecessary. I think that these extreme things come as a last resort. So, hey, God is saying, hey, I tried everything else to get you to turn to me, but here it is. Now you did it to yourself.
Now that's why Martha Wilcox says the greater works are not having these things happen in the first place. What could be greater than that?
Yeah.
And they do, what do they say? That there's no atheists on a boat out in the ocean that's sinking, or in a foxhole, or any extreme situation, everyone suddenly becomes God-fearing. And you see it. I mean, and you know that's true.
Well, you do see it, because whenever there's some sort of, you know, quote, national emergency, the first thing politicians will do is say, oh, God bless America and all that stuff.
Right.
And meanwhile, they'll never say it otherwise. So.
Yeah. And sometimes after we've come through something like that, everyone starts going back to church, but maybe only for a certain amount of time till everything gets better. And again, then they forget the Father. But if you truly learn to love him, which is highly important, that won't happen. That's the point of the watching point. Chardell?
I think, too, I didn't know that God does everything. God does everything. I didn't really know that till I came here. So that's why we have to teach these kids that God does everything, every single day, every moment they have him, no matter what.
It means that we also have to have a continual, ongoing relationship with God, and not in the extremity.
Thank you.
And that's what I was thinking about today. You know, God has answers, and God is telling me a lot of things that I seem to think I know better. God knows better, so I have to move Zeri out of the way and let God do what God needs to do.
Thank you. Yeah, that's very true. And if you're with him in the small things, so-called small things during the day, then there will not be these extremities. It'll just be very natural to turn to him and to find your answer. But it's all day consistency with the Father.
You know, we start our Lord's Prayer with our Father. And he is our Father. He belongs to each and every one of us. I guess to say it more accurately, we all belong to him. And it just indicates a very tender relationship that we have with our Father. If people would only acknowledge that, you know, things would be so much better. I heard Mrs. Evans used to tell us that someone who told her, you would have much more if you were more grateful. And this happened when she was quite younger and still learning. But it's a fundamental truth. If we were grateful to God more consistently, how much more good would be apparent?
Thank you.
It says in the blue book, too, Mrs. Eddy said, when I see a student grateful, I know he is safe.
Yes. And, you know, the reason Mrs. Eddy had so many subjects on old theology is because we are taught differently. And I think even if you are, they say, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth generation Christian scientists, the old theology dies hard. And I know I used to be afraid of God, and no one told me that, but it gets passed down. From, you know, my father was Lutheran, my mother was Presbyterian. This fear of the God that they talk about in the Bible, you tried to please him so he wouldn't get mad at you. All of this stuff. And I didn't even really know I had it until coming to Christian Science. And then it took me a while. Mrs. Eddy calls it unwinding your snarls. First, I had to see that was a problem, because how can you trust someone you're afraid of? How can you trust someone who you think has earthquakes and wars and all these horrible things.
Let alone love that entity.
Let alone love. So I had to unwind that. It was a knot, frankly, and realize this is not Christian Science. This is not the God of love. And then learn to know him as love. And that began humbly with gratitude to see all the good that he has brought into my life and to see him as the source, not the things, but behind the things, God. Mrs. Eddy says that too in the chapter on prayer. Are you really grateful for life, truth, and love? Are you really grateful for God? Florence, were you going to say something?
Yes, I was just adding that, yes, love and protection, I feel, goes together. I mean, everything you love, you want to keep, so you take care of it. So it's not complete for us to just think of God as only love or only protection, or go to him, you know, for those specific things. The two must be together. In so many songs, you hear, he comes after us. He's ready to receive us all the time. And that should do away with that awful sense of guilt sometimes that one can go for years with, you know, because he loves us. I mean, he it's a constant thing. It's an infinite love that God has for us all. And so if we dwell in that, and we know that that is what's going on, we all can also be assured of our protection in this sense.
That's beautiful. It's a beautiful thought. They go together.
And there's a good reason for that too, isn't there? Because since God is all, if we learn to love God, that's the only way we can love ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it's the only way we can love anybody else. If we love God first, if we love life, truth, and love. Because otherwise, love is not perfect, right?
Right. Thank you. Yep. And that is why many people have been healed by going into a Christian Science church and seeing on the walls, God is love. And that thought in itself is very healing. The word spoken is healing, even if at times we don't understand it entirely. The word, felt he the power of the word. So, and that quote from Miscellany, the always bear in mind, his presence, power, and peace meet all human needs and reflect all bliss. I looked up that word bliss, and it's perfect happiness, complete joy. And that means despite any outer whatever things are going on around you, you have that sense of complete happiness and joy. It's quite beautiful. Something, it's a state of being. When you're in that divine mind, you have that sense of complete joy. You also have a sense of complete gratitude. It just flowing in you. You couldn't be otherwise. But when we seem to get out of that mind, and truly it is the only mind, but in belief we drift away, then sometimes you have to struggle a bit to get your joy or your gratitude back. But then maintain it and keep it.
Definitely easier to maintain it and then try to struggle to get it back. It's a much happier life. Also, speaking of Christian Scientists, I think sometimes they don't know their believing old theology, because they think, well, I was raised in Christian Science, or like you said, generations, but because they're kind of, they think they're above it or away from it, that it comes out in funny things like, you know, if you don't read your lesson, bad things will happen. Or if you read
an unauthorized
book, well, you know, what's going to happen? God, what's going to strike you down? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just, if you follow that thought, or you have to have this teacher, or do this or do that, or if you didn't do this, that's bad, or mm-hmm. or they even judge by your outward
appearance, or heaven forbid if you ever went to a doctor.
Yes, exactly.
That's all that can be handed down from the generations of organizational Christian Science, which, as we know, isn't the pure expression of it.
It's really a fear of God.
It is. You're right. And it got into the movement.
Right. It's superstition.
Superstition.
Old theology, which we have to. We have to work out of it.
Yes.
And it's work, but it's wonderful work.
Like Mrs. Singletary said, you have to recognize it.
Yeah, first you have to. No, you don't. It's a form. You just think it. You think you've accepted these things as truths that are only beliefs, not truths. Who is trying to speak?
I was just going to say, I think also too, there's like this intellectualism that creeps in, that gets in the way of, you know, feeling that love for God. And that's been one of the snarls for me to untangle, was, you know, really knowing the letter and intellectually understanding the letter, but not feeling it, you know, not feeling that love in my heart because it became too intellectual. And that's why in the lesson it taught, she says, you know, you have to study the letter thoroughly, but you have to imbibe, you know, drink in the spirit. So that's where I've grown the most, I think, is starting to learn to truly imbibe the spirit and love God, you know, since becoming independent here.
Thank you. Yes,
because too much of the letter will cloud the spirit. It will hide the spirit. It will get you into a position where you think you don't need the spirit. And that's very dangerous.
Yeah, it's a very important statement in the lesson in Science and Health at number 3. And we all ask ourselves, how can I progress most rapidly in the understanding of Christian Science? And she gives the answer. Study thoroughly the letter. That means, again, Science and Health prose works the Bible. When you think all Mrs. Eddy had was the Bible, and look what came forth from that. And now we are fortunate to have her works as well. You have to study it, not just read it, not just read it once and think you've done it. Study it, and then study it again and again and again as you grow.
As she did.
As she did. And then adhere, to stick to be joined, to cleave to be consistent, to remain fixed by union of faith and principle. Adhere to the divine principle of Christian Science. Follow the behests of God. Those are his commands. 10 commandments, Sermon on the Mount, live them in your daily life. And then imbibe the spirit, which is what Lenny was talking about. And imbibe, to drink in, to absorb as a sponge, to receive and admit in the mind, and then to retain.
Retain, that's good.
So, and then abiding steadfastly in wisdom, truth, and love. In the science of mind, you will soon ascertain that error cannot destroy error. So as you're growing and studying in these ways and doing all the things we just mentioned, you're going to figure out, oh yeah, error can't destroy error. How could medicine destroy sickness? Then you will also learn that in science, there's no transfer of evil suggestions from one mortal to another. Very important. You can't be afflicted or affected by any of that. No contagion. why? Because there's but one mind. And this ever-present, omnipotent mind is reflected by you and governs the entire universe. That's sort of what Shardy was talking about. You will learn that in Christian Science, the first duty is to what?
Obey God.
Obey God. And then what?
Love.
Love your neighbor as yourself.
Love your neighbor as yourself.
And that's the third.
Have one mind.
Yes. The second is to have one mind. And then to love another as yourself. These are, you know, these don't always come easy. This takes dedication and work. And that's also in the lesson. About be watchful, sober, and vigilant. The way is straight and narrow, which leads to the understanding that God is the only life. It is a warfare with the flesh in which we must conquer sin, sickness, and death, either here or hereafter. Certainly before we can reach the goal of spirit or life in God. Sober, calm, not intoxicated, not whoopee, wahoo. Mm-hmm. Vigilant, a state of being awake, on guard, attentive to avoid danger. Watch your thought. Are you taking in what you would think of as contagious beliefs? Have you accepted someone as being unloving, unhappy, and kind? There's an article we've had on the website. It's deep. It's good. We don't know who wrote it. Anyway, but it's called Moral Idiocy.
Paul Smiley.
No, it wasn't. I asked Nancy. It's not Paul Smiley. He did one on moral idiocy, but not this one.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, but it brings out that, you know, something will come to you very strongly, certainly in politics, that we see happen all the time, or in your home, in your life, and it's very upsetting, whatever it is you're seeing, and you want to get out and try to save the day, rush in there and fix things, and it seems like that's a good thing to do, but pretty soon you're engaged in a battle with the beast, and you've made a reality out of it. And you lose your conscious oneness with God. So, yes, the main thing we always do is prayer to get your thought right about this other person or thing or political situation. View it correctly and then know God works. And if you have to say something, of course, but don't get involved in the battle of the beast. Do you want to say something?
I absolutely love that article. That meant so much to me. It really cleared up a lot of things. It very succinctly let me know all the things I was doing wrongly in the past. You know, the human duty, the loyalty to person, all that stuff. It just leads nowhere. Nowhere good.
Yeah, and it's often very much this human do-goody thing. That you're the one, you got to do it, you got to save the world, you got to save this person, the situation, whatever. You go out and battle. And, you know, I was thinking recently about abolitionists, and they did a lot of good in waking up people and showing people the wrongness of what they were doing. But ultimately, did they heal hate?
No.
So here we stand. So help us, God, with the science. It's the only thing that will heal, truly right the wrongs of this world. You know, I know other so-called activists very passionate about what they're doing, and you know, I respect a lot of it, but ultimately, only God can truly change the situation. Is that not correct? It is.
We hope that they are meek enough to know that to work according to God's direction only. That's yes. What they're doing, fine. But if not, it's not working.
Because otherwise, you just create more aggravation and more hatred, right? And this one and that one and this and that and this and that. And the problem becomes bigger instead of less. So
I can't change anybody. I can't change anybody's opinion. All I can do is to be the best example I can be and let God change everybody else that needs to be.
And know that there's only one consciousness, really, for all.
Yes.
Yeah, and you certainly don't want what you say to get someone like further entrenched in their wrong thinking.
Because that's what it can do.
Why it's better than just to work mentally, unless God gives you the words.
Exactly.
Yes, and that's in Christian Science, because you said do it mentally, or the resistance will just build when you talk. And especially in such a self-righteous way, which it usually is.
you know, when you talk about you can't change anybody, that's true. But you can also demand that only good can come to you. That's scientific. I have been in so many situations where the outward appearance was just whatever, you know, stressful, horrific, whatever. And I just, all you can hold to sometimes is only good can come to me. And that does dispel.
But you see, it's God that does it, and it's the prayer that does it. You don't go and take the person and say, GD, you've got to change, which I've probably done it too many times, but I assure you it doesn't work.
But it's also you, your thought is changed around the situation. When you're demanding, as you're saying, you're demanding that only good can come to you, you're knowing that only good is out there that can come to you.
Right. Yes, and that is,
Yeah, and in addition, you can know that only good can come to whoever the other person is.
Exactly.
And then you can go even further, and you can require that that person see only the good in you.
And that is a Gilbert Carpenter prayer about seeing yourself right, seeing others right. Yes, a beautiful prayer.
And that goes back to the opening prayer from Collectania, just understanding the allness of God.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I know in working with marital difficulties, one of the things that we've learned here in the church, and I know it's in Mrs. Eddy's writings too, where the other person is in your thought. So what are you thinking about the other person? If you are thinking terrible things about the other person and are so mad, then that person becomes a giant and you will have what you think. But again, you have to discipline your thought to be knowing the truth about the other person and yourself, just the Gilbert Carpenter prayer, and you will bring that out as well. And also, this other person is definitely governed by God. It's not going to conform to what you want in the way that you want it. You have to let that person free to be governed by God. That's an example with marital relationships, but with children, with any kind of relationships, you must know they're governed by God as you are, and you don't have to teach them something that they don't already know.
Bignall Young says that in his Individual Consciousness or something, where it says, if you want to help someone, leave them alone.
Right.
No, that's so true, because you know, each one of us has a different pathway to God and from God. So someone else is taking a different pathway than you think they should. Well, you got to get out of the way and let them take the pathway that they take.
And trust that all things work together for good to them that love God.
Yeah, who are called according to his purpose. It will all work out. And going back to what Tony said, you know, truth, life, and love are a law of annihilation against anything unlike themselves. It's probably not a direct quote, but it's close. And that's Mrs. Eddy. And as you are expressing truth, life, and love, his qualities, the error can't even come to you. It can't. It'll annihilate itself. And that isn't that what happens when you're with a very spiritually minded person? Whatever ails you can sometimes just disappear into its native nothingness, because they've got that mind of Christ that will destroy it. Because it's not the truth, and they know it. I hope that was clear, but it's an important point. I'm going to read now from, this was an article, again, that Carrie sent a while ago about Mrs. Eddy. I've read things from it before. It was by Annie Knott, who knew her. And it's called Mrs. Eddy, the Woman. And it's from the March 1910 Christian Science Journal. This was Mrs. Eddy's life in solitude. Very few people understand why Mrs. Eddy lives in such seclusion from the world. They fail to see that besides the ceaseless demands of the movement, which she has established and which she directs. She has the temperament of a spiritual seer, and this constantly impels her to turn away from material things to spiritual realities. Without this communion with the divine mind, she could not have given to the world Christian Science, nor had the ability to direct the activities of the movement, oftentimes in the face of great demands which call for more than human wisdom and endurance. We may remember that the world's great spiritual thinkers had very often to withdraw from the busy haunts of men to commune with the divine principle of the universe. Victor Hugo says that solitude generates a certain amount of sublime exaltation. It is like the smoke arising from the burning bush. A wonderful lucidity of mind results, which converts the student into a seer or poet, into a prophet. End quote. Of course, solitude alone would never convert the ordinary mortal into a saint or a seer, and it is not everyone who cares to be often alone with God and himself. Jesus left his disciples and went up unto a mountain to pray. When his vigil was ended, he came to them, walking upon the sea, still the storm which had hindered their progress. One who has true motive in withdrawing from the world is not a mere visionary. Rather, does he gain the wonderful lucidity of mind which can master every problem with the wisdom that is from above. So I thought that's important because in order to deal with a lot of things, you've got to have that time alone with God. But it is a combination. You can't become a monk. I don't think that's the answer. You have to co-elbow, as Mrs. Eddy says, which she certainly did. And then a couple of other things that Linda, our friend Linda in Nevada, sent us. It's about God. To get personal, absolutely stops all progress for the moment because you have got in a third, and that means that God is not all in all. You must see God as all there is to any person, for your communion is with God every instant. In fact, it is because of your oneness with God that you are even aware of a person, place, or thing. God embraces within himself all person, place, and thing, and you know this. So once you see all these pictures, some kind of a person you don't like or warring nations, or you've got this third thing going on, okay? And you got to get back to the allness of God. It goes back to even what Florence read in the prayer, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." The one mind. And we have to see beyond the erroneous picture to the face of God, just like Mrs. Eddy did with the storm clouds, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, and then this also from Linda in Nevada, and also Eustace. Remember, you are dealing with mind every moment, and to mind there is no fear attached, and therefore you are not afraid about anything or anyone. You will know what to do each moment, and you will do it. The only Christian Scientist that needs to be awakened is the one who is asleep, and you are not asleep. And therefore, you will hear the voice of mind telling you just exactly what you should do about anything. All things work together for good to those who love good. You know this. Stand on this allness of good. We have so many wonderful workers who said such wonderful things, and it's just very helpful. So I think, Karen, I'll let you share. Linda mentioned that Bicknell Young article on God is consciousness.
Individual consciousness.
Yes, mm-hmm. And that's the article you spoke of, which is everyone should be very familiar with it. It's a wonderful article. Go ahead.
Do you want me to read everything that I sent to you in the email?
I think excerpt some things.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. I know they're all good. Whatever you think.
Yeah. Okay. God is individual consciousness. God consciousness is individual consciousness. When the fear or hate or love of error is overcome, to the extent that we consciously realize that God is unfolding as our daily experience in infinite form and variety and activity, we will enjoy outwardly abundant life, health, harmony, peace, joy, success, without taking thought. Never can you find God, because that which is engaged in the search for God is God Himself. Let us remember that regardless of the name or nature of any physical claim, the actual claim is always the same. There is only one claim that we are ever called upon to face, and that is the mesmeric suggestion of a selfhood apart from God. We must continue forward. And by going forward, I mean this. Right now, you are as much in the kingdom of heaven as you will ever be. Nothing can be added to you, and nothing can be taken away from you. Then it would seem that all that is necessary toward the realization of this is a willingness to relax and acknowledge, quote, Father, all that thou art, I am, end quote. Nothing to accomplish, nothing to get, nothing to be, end quote. All that thou art, I am. And rest in this truth. Rest in this spiritual awareness of I am-ness. This is not too difficult. It is not difficult at all. It only seems so at the beginning. But gradually, as we take this attitude toward life, as we assume this identity, it becomes the only reality of our being. Today is the day of conscious oneness with God, and our whole life can start anew from this period. Let us take today as our day. Age has nothing to do with it. Past experience, lack, none of these have anything to do with it. Let today be the day of conscious oneness with God. Ask yourself, do I know God as the consciousness of individual being? The entire secret of harmonious living is in the realization of God as individual consciousness. We are going to get home only when we realize the nature of God as individual consciousness. When we really understand that, then we see that we can trust every idea to the government of the one consciousness. We can loose him and let him go, so to speak. Our interest is in the principle and in showing forth of that principle. Let us accept this principle, that God is the life, soul, mind, substance, and form of each individual being. Let us accept and realize this, that when we say God, we are talking about the consciousness of individual being. And there's just one more part that I added. Then this God, this consciousness, is a law unto the body, harmony, health, wealth, and happiness of all. This must be accepted as a principle. When we accept this as a true principle, then we revert to that principle whenever we are faced with any erroneous picture or claim. It is then that we can remember that we are not interested in the claim. Our interest is in the principle.
It is a powerful, powerful article. There was a time I was listening to it just about every day, or studying it. And It's one to become very familiar with. In it, he also talks about how to give a treatment.
Yeah.
He says, when there is a belief of error, it is a mesmerism and nothing more. It always is a mesmerism. And it's always God with us does the healing work. Work with the absolute confidence of mind. Handle as though God has descended from heaven and said, I will heal the case. It's beautiful. So can't go through the whole thing, but it's a wonderful explanation in many ways of God. And by individual consciousness, you are not God. Here again, you're not God, but God expresses himself through you if you allow him to. And how do you do that? It goes back to our first, we talked about it first, from how do you progress in your study of science to do those things that she mentions. Study thoroughly, imbibe the spirit, study thoroughly the letter, then imbibe the spirit, all those things. Then this consciousness of God becomes yours. It is yours. It always has been yours. It's just been misted over by the mist of Genesis 2. And then one thing I read, I found this so helpful. This is in Questions and Answers, Miscellaneous Writings, on the question about something about teeth. And Mrs. Eddy handles the belief of pain, which all of us have at times had to deal with. And she writes, Mrs. Eddy, matter can report pain, or that mind is in matter, is but a dream at all times. That's pretty emphatic. If you're having any kind of a pain, or that matter can report pain to you, it is a dream at all times. See it as a dream. Again, with a mesmerism. It's not true. If you handle it that way, you will find good results. Because why? Because it's the truth, right?
Yes.
That's why we must approach all of these things with reverence, because it is the truth. And, you know, the story of Joseph, when he was asked by the king to interpret a dream, what was his reply?
I can't do it, but God can.
Exactly. Yes. And that is very similar to what Jesus would say, isn't it? What did Jesus say?
I can of my own self do nothing.
Thank you.
Right. The Father that dwelleth within me, he doeth the works.
Yes.
But the Father dwelled within him.
Yes.
That was very key, wasn't it?
Dwells within us all. The kingdom of God is within us, right?
Yeah, it's worth asking ourselves every day, is God dwelling in me today? Am I having just one mind today?
Yeah. And, you know, that's so beautifully brought out in that Bigdal Young article, that we can relax. Bruce, you want to say something?
No, yeah. I'm taking this all in. This is amazing stuff.
Okay, well. And what you think of this attitude that Joseph had, what it did for him. I mean, look at all this awful stuff happening to him all the time. And yet he knew his God. He never, ever fought back, or he just knew God. And God lifted him up out of every situation to where he's, you know, saving nations. It's incredibly powerful. So let us, as Mrs. Eddy says, give our best efforts to it, right? Our best efforts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I trust, you know, through all this, you're learning to have this better sense of God, what it is, who he is, and how we relate to him. And he is, as Mrs. Eddy says, our one relative in heaven and on earth. We love him as Pa. I guess that's what she meant by capital P-A, right?
Yeah.
So, in a, I got many beautiful articles from Carrie, but there's one about the word that I loved very much, and how important the word is, and how Jesus spake it. And sometimes rebuking the error, sometimes with great love. And I thought how important it is that our words are healing, whether they're rebuking an error or whether they're just compassionate words of love. Felt ye the power of the word. And, you know, we talked about New Year's resolutions. Well, I always pray, you know, let my words, let the meditation of my heart. What is that, Bruce? And thank you. That's a beautiful prayer to say every day.
One thing that's guide for the acceptable, I got to admit, this is this idea of affection. I mean, the Watching Point came out with PAW, protection and affection. Let's call it just PAW. And Jesus said Father, but also said Abba, and translated, that is a very affectionate term for our God. It's a very loving and dear Father. That's what Abba is.
So thank you.
That's
yes.
What Jesus used.
Oh yeah, I guess PAW, protection and affection.
When we say Sorry. Abba comes, it's an old Aramaic word, and it's used in Hindi, it's used in Farsi, it's used in Arabic, it's used in many, many languages. And when you say Appa or Appa, it means my beloved father.
Thank you. Thank you, yes. In that article, it's called Healing Words, and I hope that, you know, a lot of these articles we discuss will be in the Liberator and put on the website as well. It says, as we learn to rest in divine love more and more trustingly, the words which we speak become restful, happy, and loving. And Jesus was a master of healing words. He reflected the loving wisdom and unerringly suits the word to the occasion and state of thought of the hearer. His rebukes to the Pharisees were rebukes to the Pharisaism of all times. He respected his own words as proceeding from God, saying, the words that I speak unto you, they are spirit and they are life. So, just be conscious of our words, and if we're in that one mind, our words will heal and bless, however they come out. And God gives those words to you. It's never your own doing. It's God's. So we have a beautiful article to end on. It's a little bit longer, so we'll start now.
This is an article titled Be Not Afraid by Irving C. Tomlinson from the January 1905 Sentinel. He writes, Jesus has one message for us that should always ring in our ears, and that message is, be not afraid. When we, like disciples, seem to find ourselves in the troubled waters of mortal mind, and foolish fears take possession of us, Christ walks over the wave, and in a voice full of love exclaims, be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. This has ever been the voice of God to his children. The psalmist said, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Here should we take our stand. Is not God infinite love, and is he not all-powerful? We have only to be still, only to wait on the Lord, and his power will strengthen and restore. Fear belongs not to the children of God. It is the offspring of mortal mind. It is of dreamland and without substance or reality. It was Adam who, in the presence of God, exclaimed, "I heard thy voice and I was afraid." A true child of God, in the presence of his heavenly Father, hears the blessed message, "Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee, yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness." Daniel is the type of the true Christian Scientist. In the presence of lions, he turned his back upon them and his face toward the light. So may we calmly turn our backs upon error of every form and turn our faces toward the heavenly light of love divine. Then we shall hear from on high that sweet message which came to Daniel, "O man greatly beloved, fear not. Peace be unto thee. Be strong. Yea, be strong." Would we escape from fear? Would we utterly destroy it so that we can live above it as the mountain rises above the mists? Then let us reflect immortal love. For where love is, there fear is not. As the beloved apostle has said, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casteth out fear, because fear hath torment. Love is the eternal sunshine in whose presence there is living light. For God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. This verse from the Christian Science hymnal is always helpful. In heavenly love abiding, no change my heart shall fear. And safe is such confiding, for nothing changes here. The storm may roar without me, my heart may low be laid, but God is round about me, and can I be dismayed?
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.